Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 96-year-old Joe Peterburz of Roseville, California. Born in Minnesota, he grew up in Wisconsin, and you heard him say he was studying to be a priest before the call to serve our country redirected his path to the skies as a P-51 Mustang pilot. Joe and five of his brothers, along with their father, all served in World War II. The other brother was too young at that point, but served in the Korean War. Two of Joe's brothers would become Gold Star heroes. And you heard Joe mention that he was in training at Maxwell Field in Alabama when he received news that his brother Paul had been killed while serving on the patrol gunboat USS Plymouth, which had been sunk by a German U-boat in August 1943. Well, I've got to ask you, too, since you shared that, what was that like for you at the time? Because you're still a teenager. You're training to be a pilot. And now you find out your brother has been killed in this war.
That was a very traumatic for me because we were 2 years apart. And we were, not only brothers but best friends and did everything together. And we really loved each other. Anyway, I got the word and I went to my room and I just bawled. All day and all night, and then the next day I said I got to pull myself together. I pulled myself together and got on the thing, and I think that sort of affected my. It would made me not as. Oh, how do you?
It affected your outlook or your
motivation. You know, I don't get. I mean, people were dying left and right around me, and it did not affect me. It did, I didn't, I guess I isolated myself from really deep, deep friendships where I would be hurt if I, missed them. I had four of my really good friends killed in World War II. I felt bad and felt sorry and all that sort of stuff, but I didn't have the deep emotional strain that I had with my brother.
Sounds like maybe you forced yourself to almost insulate from it a little
bit. Yes, that's the word I was looking for, insulate, yeah.
I understand this still isn't easy to talk about, and I'm not trying to be dramatic, but you say you went home to comfort your mom. Mm-hmm. Could you get a sense for how that affected her?
Oh, yes, yeah. It was really deep, and of course, she had other... Her husband was gone. My dad was already fighting in the Pacific.
In his 50s,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was in the invasion of the Philippines with MacArthur. And it was a very traumatic. They wouldn't accept it for years after that. They still thought he was missing, and that sort of thing. He was working in the engine room when there were torpedoes. Yeah. What, you're not going to survive that.
So you get that news before you ever head overseas. And
oh, yeah. Well before I finished training. Yeah.
Did it make you question whether you wanted to continue?
No. That,
what do you think was that drove you? What was your motivation?
Oh, I know. I think it was primarily the sense of when I was very young, 16, 17, I knew what I was willing to die for. I was willing to die for my God, my family, and my country. And, there was no ifs, ands, or, that was it. Mm-hmm. And, I felt the evil that was, it sort of goes along with actually the religious aspects of my life, too, because it was pure evil that was going on. So I had real motivation. Maybe it increased my motivation.
I could see that. So you've got some time in the steerman, some time in the Volte vibrator. And was flying something that grabbed you immediately? Did you feel that rush or that, this is what I was made to do?
Oh, yeah. With the steerman, it was just because that was an aerobatic and I was good at aerobatics. I could take that thing, put it on a point, spin it and see 3.5 turns and pop it right out of it.
What do you mean could? I bet you still can.
I would try it.
I know some guys who go around with a two-seat Stearman, and they take guys like you up anytime you want to go. So.
And then the thing, I was in C. I graduated from primary in C, and we went to basic with the BT-13. We finished that. There's no room in the – so then we're put back about – so I accumulated – well, probably close to 100 hours in the BT. The normal thing was 65. And then I went to Napier Field in Dothan, Alabama for advance with the T-6. Mm-hmm. So I flew that, and I was on the aerobatic team there. Finished that with, no problem. And then 15th of April, 1944, I was commissioned a second lieutenant, fighter pilot, and I was 19 years old.
What are the odds of that? Not too many guys can tell that story. Do you remember the first time you climbed into a P-51?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had to go to the P-40 first.
The old Warhawk.
Yeah. So after we graduated, we went to Fort Myers, Florida, where we flew the P-40 in. There must have been 15 or 20. They called them RTUs, replacement training units, in Florida. All of them, to my knowledge, they either had P-51s or P-47s, and then there was only one, the P-40.
You guys had the leftovers, huh?
Oh, yeah, but it was, the P-40 was like a big Stearman as far as I was concerned. It handled really, really nice, and we had jumped the 51s, and if they wanted to dogfight us, we could beat them in a dogfight.
Really?
We were more maneuverable, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the speed advantage and other technical advances were in the 51 that we didn't have in the B-40. And I flew the A-24, which is a SBD, and we used it for instrument training. And I got about 40 hours in it, two-seater, and you get in the back and you put the cover over the canopy and you'd fly instruments. Mm-hmm. That's how you got your instrument training. Anyway, finished that, and I had one ride, a flight in a L-5.
Oh, nice and light.
Yeah, I was on duty. I was duty officer. I got called from the flight line, said, "Hey, we got a sergeant on emergency leave. You need to fly him up to Orlando." And I said, "Okay." I came down and said, "Where's the?" I'm looking around. "Where's the Burke?" They said, "Well, you're going in this." I said, "What's that?" L-5. I was expecting an A-24.
A little bit different.
And so I said, "Well, how the hell do you fly this?" I said, and they said, "Well, I'll show you how to start it." They showed me how to start it. So the Sergeant Seth jumped in the back and went tearing up to Orlando, from Fort Myers to Orlando, and got to Orlando, and it's a B-24 base, and all the, traffic's going in and out, and I call for landing, and they clear me, and so I'm going in, and like a good fighter pilot, I land in the first part of the runway, going, and I think the tower starts screaming at me, "Get the hell out, get down that runway." So I took off and flew it and landed on the last turn off, and then flew back, no incident. But I got about, I think it was 5-6 hours in the L-5.
I guess if you expected an A-24, you were looking for the dive brakes on the L-5,
huh? Right, yeah.
Well, I guess the better question, Joe, is what haven't you flown? Probably not much.
Oh, well, I was very limited, 51 and the A-24, P-40. But later, but when I was more in the administrative field, I flew C-47s, B-25s, had some time in the B-24, the A-3, and several others. And then, of course, the F-80A and the F-80B, and then the T-33. Mm-hmm. Never did get into the supersonic stuff, but I always wanted to fly the 86, but just the opportunity never came around. So.
Well, you did fly quite a bit, over 400 combat hours, is that what you said, in the
P-51? Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
What was that like the first time you revved those engines up?
Well, the story here now, I'm finished, I've got about 140 hours on the P-40, mm-hmm. So we're shipped overseas, and go over on the Ile-de-France, and if not convoyed, it could you know, it could, with its own speed, it had enough speed to outrun the submarines. So anyway, we get over there about the 2nd of November and land in Scotland and go down to Peterborough, King's Cliff RAF station, and that's where we were stationed, the 20th Fighter Group, 55th Fighter Squadron. I was put into the 55th Squadron. They had the 77th and the 79th. Were the three squadrons. And I was put in the 55th, and the 20th was just transitioning. They had just started in July, transitioning from the P-38 into the P-51. And they were having lots of troubles. You know, the no torque to the torque of the 51.
Sure.
In fact, the day we came in, we were on the perimeter. We were in a 2.5-ton truck and it's all set in the back, coming around the perimeter road over to the administrative area. We had to stop because a flight was, a squadron was coming back in from a combat mission. And we're sitting there watching them land, and because none of us, we were all P-40 guys, and there were seven or eight of us, and watching them land, and the 51 comes in and hits the runway and bounces. And we're all watching to see what he's going to do. And we heard him start the throttle up. And we said, no, no. And he just threw that full throttle. And he just went right in. So ooh, that was our welcome to the 20th Fighter Group.
Well, you know what not to do now.
Huh? Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, you know, you do with the torque of the 51. The torque of the P-40 was not quite as bad, but it was, you know, it was severe. You'd do the same thing in a P-40 if you'd thrown the engine, the power to it during that sort of situation. But anyway, we checked out the 51B and flew the C most of the training and got a D. The B had a Spitfire canopy, a modified canopy, a bubble canopy on it, and then went to the D and got, I think, 16-something hours in the P-51 and started flying combat.
Did it take you a while to get a feel?
Oh, no. What no, it, from the P-54, 51 was just, a, you know, going from a... there was not that... there was lots of, you know, improvements and stuff like that as far as speed and handling and this sort of thing. So it was... We just... read the manual and hopped in.
What did you like about the Mustang?
The altitude that we could get, the rate of climb, and just overall performance. It was, you know, nothing in particular. Well, the thing is, you know, it grows on you. And by the time I was halfway through, I just felt like it was part of my body. You know, I was thinking about going left, and I go left. Thinking about going right, just like driving a stick shift after you don't even think of what you're doing. You're just doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was able to get that feeling between myself and the aircraft, that we were one piece of machinery.
Well, and that's a good thing, because you were going to be in some very difficult positions, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Did you have an expectation before you got into combat of what you thought it was going to be like?
No, just a lot of fun. You had to give a 19-year-old with a 2,000-horsepower engine and 650 caliber machine guns and say, hey, there's the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I never was afraid or concerned or anything like that. Through all the various things that happened during the 5 months I was in combat, never, you know, maybe sometimes, I can't even say I was apprehensive, you know, but it was just, you were going to get killed. It's the other guy that's going to get killed. You aren't, you know, you're going to live forever at 19, 20 years old. That's the attitude you have. And you're out there to do the job. And I was nicknamed the Strafing Kid because I just loved to straight, and I did a really good job at strafing. So it was an exciting experience and a fulfilling one, you know, too.
Well, and I want to hear as much as you're willing to share it. It just strikes me what you shared early on about what endeared you to the nuns at your Catholic school was your admiration for Father Damien. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's famous for caring for the lepers and mm-hmm. having no regard for his own personal safety. And mm-hmm. his, I think he probably had the same approach, right?
Yeah.
Leprosy's not going to get me.
I never thought of that, but that probably is true.
And you had those Messerschmitts, whether they're prop-driven or later jet-driven, they're not going to get me.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of the time they didn't.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The time they, well, no, they did not, they never did get me because I shot down by ground fire.
There you go. Well, what was it like to encounter the Luftwaffe in the air over Europe?
Okay, my first encounter, it was my 11th mission sometime in January, 13th of January, something like that. But there were about 1,200 B-17s. It's escorted by about 900 fighters. And we were going to targets in the Magdeburg, Berlin area. And we were probably 20 minutes out of bomb drop time for the bombers. And we were hit by a couple hundred of 109s. Their tactic was that the 109s would come through, hit the bombers and run, hoping to draw the fighter escort off, which in many units they did. But with our unit, we were really told, you stay with the bomber. Your job is to protect the bombers, not to go chase an aircraft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the attitude we had. And then we were hit by another couple hundred of 190s. 109s first and then 190s, and then they'd stay and we'd mix it up. And there were dogfights all the way from 35,000 feet down to the deck, from Berlin back to Magdeburg, and there were engines falling, wings falling, parachutes in the air, and I was more concerned about hitting debris and stuff than I was being hit by another aircraft. But anyway, I saw a 190 coming towards me. So I pulled into front and did a check-in with them. We were doing head-on, and I was firing, and I could see this cannon blinking around his nose, and I kept firing. I saw a couple of hits in his wing, and I passed about 50 feet underneath him. My flight leader, he was behind the 190, but he couldn't fire because he'd be afraid to get the hell out of there. So as soon as I passed under him, then he blew him, and we got him there. But we got 19 and a half kills that day in the group. But, you know, the bombers got slaughtered. And at that time, I thought, you know, I just wish I could be as brave as they are, because they would go to the targets humming along at 150, 160 knots and being hit by flak that you could, and then being slaughtered by the bomber. But they went to the target. I never saw anything like where the bombers would deter from their course. And I just hoped I could be as brave as they were.
Sounds like you had to be. And I'm sure a lot of people are noticing how matter-of-factly you describe some of this. And I know you've told your story a few times. But what you just described is not what a typical 19 or 20-year-old is dealing with, where you're flying a plane at high speed with another aircraft shooting at you and flying directly at you at the same time, and one false move can end your life.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't sound like you felt too much pressure.
No. No. I was going to get that guy. But
yeah.
My flight leader got him, which was great.
It's break time again, but there's more to come with 96-year-old Joe Peterburz. It's becoming pretty clear to me that we're going to have to extend this conversation with Joe into our next episode as well, but we'll make sure to at least dive into the events of April 10th, 1945, and the last of his P-51 missions in World War II, a mission that created a whole new adventure for this ace pilot. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.